Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, warm welcome to the annual call for Lenzing for the full year results 2018. After our record year in 2017, definitely was a year with a significantly more demanding market environment. Nevertheless, we feel the Lenzing Group delivered solid results. Group revenue slightly lower than the year before, with 2,176,000,000 overall on a satisfying level. Particularly pleased we were with the development of our specialty fiber portfolio. The ratio stands now at 45.5%, and it was important for us in 2018. We always said this will be the acid test year with respect to price resilience. We felt that we were very successful in decoupling specialty prices from standard viscose prices, and I think that's something that we saw as a major resilience block in our portfolio. EBITDA with 382 million, some 120 million down versus the year before. Thomas later on will elucidate on some of the influences there. Net income partly affected by one-offs. Also there, Thomas will give more elucidations, and with ROCE at 10.3%, we were above the hurdle rate that we have set for ourselves in the strategy. Balance sheet remains very robust with an adjusted equity ratio at 59%, still very solid, despite slightly lower than the year before. Nevertheless, our equity in total at record level and net financial debt over EBITDA at 0.6%, again underpinning the solidity of our balance sheet. I think that was one of the main trigger that also led us to propose to the shareholder conference in April that we will propose to the annual shareholder meeting a dividend of 3 euros per share, plus a special dividend 2 euros per share. Of course, it's very pleasing for me to have my colleagues, Thomas Umdrauf and Robert van de Kerkhof, confirmed in their position for another term. Looking at some of the strategic highlights, the group continues to follow the strategy of organic growth in the area of specialty fibers. We were successful last year to focus on very important initiatives in the area of pulp. Our pulp expansions progress. We will come on stream with our Lenzing pulp expansion second half this year. The strategic step in Brazil is something that we decided on as a investigation to plan that, to get all the permits, to make the final decision at the end of this year. We acquired the 30% of our Chinese operation from our minority investor and will transform Nanjing into a specialty fiber hub. Sustainability, a key promise of the Lenzing brand or say core value, will be further underpinned by investments over the next four to five years of around 100 million to further improve our eco footprint. Specialization, already mentioned that we are very pleased with the specialty ratio. R&D investment as per first cut definition at slightly below 43 million euro, still way higher than anybody else in our industry. The ramp-up of our Heiligenkreuz facility went according to plan. For sure, the most difficult decision was the temporary mothballing of our project in Mobile, Alabama. We still think that given the environment that we have there, all the intelligence that we have in China, this was the right decision to take, also showing capital management discipline. I think we are very pleased with the sustainable innovations, particularly ECOVERO and ReFibra. They gain momentum, support our brand, and become, particularly with ECOVERO, an important part of our specialty fiber portfolio. In terms of customer intimacy, brand architecture rollout goes very well. One more comment to that a bit later. We opened our innovation center in Indonesia. You might remember we did an innovation center opening in Hong Kong that is more focused towards the brand and final consumer, whereas the innovation center in Indonesia is more for efficiency, process development, and value chain partners. Forward solutions, I think the decision to invest in a second pilot plant for Tensilux to support all the preparation for growth of Tensilux as well as the launch of the web technology, real breakthrough innovation in the area of nonwovens, together with 25 patents, were absolute highlights. Last but not least, we got the Austrian State Prize for smart packaging. So also on that front, we benefit from the increasing concern of consumers in the area of packaging, and together with some partners, we are offering their solutions. The targets that we have set as part of this Core 10 strategy, we are fully on track. CAGR of the period of 12% versus a target of 10% on EBITDA growth. We are above the 10% on return on capital employed, and as already mentioned before, net financial debt very solid. Changing our page and looking a bit into the fiber market of 2018. 2018 was not necessarily the easiest year, where from the interfiber competition, polyester was doing relatively well, even had a massive spike in the second half of 2018, fueled by pretty high ethylene glycol prices, high terephthalic acid prices, but also paraxylene. We actually saw those prices coming down, but still at a relatively good level compared to the periods before. Cotton, also relatively stable on a reasonable high level, around the 90-ish mark after some spiking up above the $1 per pound. However, viscose, and I will get more into detail there, did show significant weakness over the last quarters. Focusing a bit more on the cotton market, consumption is still on a high level, but we see further decline in production, particularly India, Bangladesh, in part the U.S., some growth still in China, but overall production was declining, where the consumption remained on a high level. Consequence was stock reduction, mainly in China. You see inventory level now of cotton in China at the level last seen somewhere around the 2011 time frame. And that situation also led in 2018 that we had, compared to the year before, as I said before, solid prices, even some fueling up for some month, but on average close to 10% higher than the year before. And the outlook for the year is slightly lower than the average of last year's, but somewhere around the level as we have it today. Viscose, difficult year 2018. We saw prices decline by 8% year on year as an average, but year-end prices versus the average of 14,500-ish was again significantly down at 13,600. And if we just now look at the last month, we also saw prices coming further down to around the 13,000 RMB mark. Inventories, very high. We had year-end inventories around 20 days, after Chinese New Year, around 30 days. So overall, difficult environment. Why? Primarily capacity utilization. We have utilization rates now 10% lower than what we had the same period than before, with 83%. And the major, driver of that was new capacity that came into the market. You remember we were guiding between the 600 and 900,000 ton that would enter the market in 2018. It came in slightly above the lower end of that range, but still, given that we got such a substantial, additional capacity addition, prices were under pressure. Raw materials, dissolving wood pulp, pretty stable compared to the year before, at around the 920 to 940 US dollar mark, came down slightly since then, and caustic prices remained, particularly in the first half of the year, on a very high level, similar to what we had end of 17. Asia prices came slightly down. The downward trend continued, but the European prices remain on a very high level. So, viscose, not an easy environment at all, and to underpin this, here a chart showing the conversion margin of viscose over pulp. The ratio between dissolved wood pulp and viscose is 1-on-1. You pretty much need 1 ton of dissolved wood pulp for 1 ton of viscose. And if you look at that, just the delta between the two, you see that we had towards end of last year an environment that is comparable to the period as we had in 2014-ish. And this in an environment where caustic prices clearly are significantly higher than what we had the year before. So, viscose, difficult environment. But that was something that we also anticipated when we formulated our strategy. We focused on specialty, and we always said 2018 will be the year of the acid test, where we'll need to show whether also over a prolonged period of low viscose prices, our price resilience remains. And we were very pleased with the overall results. The chart shows you whereas where viscose prices strongly declined, even cotton over the last month declined, we continued to increase our lending specialty prices, and I think that was a major block in creating resilience for the group, and we are very pleased with this result. Next to innovation, next to the product features, it's getting increasingly also our brand that become an important factor in this success. We launched a new brand architecture beginning of last year with Tencel and ViuCell, sort of our two flagship brands, also oriented towards the consumers. We're lensing as a product brand, more focused on the business-to-business areas. And this new brand architecture is not only, I think, very clear, it also, I think, is significantly more efficient. We have now three core product brands compared to some 134 trademarks that we had in the past. And among all the textile ingredients, we are now, as per consumer research, the number one sustainable brand as a textile ingredient. We are a brand leader among all, you know, over all the Lycras, Gore-Tex, Coolmax, and you name them. And sustainability is also the number one trend in the textile industry. So we are very well positioned. What was very pleasing is that compared to last year, 41% more certification were required by customers who want to make sure that when they buy Lenzing, they also get Lenzing, and 67 more licenses were provided where customers wanted to co-brand with us their garment, where Tencel, ViuCell, but particularly Tencel last year, was just used as a major marketing ingredient for our customers. By now, with an 80% growth, we have 95 million branded textile products with either our textile, with our Tencel hang tags or with co-branded hang tags. Our website, 421,000, you know, sounds per se a terribly low figure, but in comparison to other websites in this space, we have now reached a very positive position also above some of the most important other fiber ingredients. With 7 billion media impressions, we, I think, really gaining traction and becoming better known. And with a 25% brand awareness, we now, you know, sell at a comparable level to Lycra, and only Gore-Tex today is as a fiber ingredient above 10 cell. Sustainability is a key driver behind this branding success. It is today not only a value in Lenzing, it is the key business innovation driver. We are using our 100% circular business model, using only renewable resources, turning those into, in the end, biodegradable and compostable products as a core differentiator from us, from other textile ingredient manufacturers. We continue to invest, despite being the leader, into further upgrading our eco footprint. But the major contribution that we make is greening up the value chain. Every ton of Lyocell, every ton of Lenzing, Ecovero makes a positive contribution versus other choices our customers and consumers can make. So the successful growth of Lenzing Ecovero underpins this. The innovation programs of Lenzing, such as the web technology, underpin that. This is our mission, greening up the value chain of the textile industry. And because we are today very well positioned. We are increasingly also being sought after partner for change, whether it's in the support of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, the fact that we again have been rated by Canopy as the number one in their hot button report. All of that is our sustainability strategy and becomes an increasingly important element for our innovation efforts, but also for our brand promise. Thomas, maybe turning over to you, focusing on the financials.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Stefan. Hello and welcome also from my side. Now my voice is also back. Let me guide you through the most important financials for Q4 and fiscal year 2018. Let me start with revenue. Revenue in Q4 was almost unchanged on the level of 540 million. Looking at the full year numbers, actually, we see a drop of 3.7%. Where does this drop come from? There are two reasons. First one being the lower trading business of standard viscose, and the other one, of course, being lower prices, basically just due to currency effects, of course, except for standard viscose. Stefan already described the price development for standard viscose. However, for all our specialties, actually, prices were up. However, in total, due to the currency effect, prices were down overall. You just have to think about the development of the U.S. dollar and the RMB development. The U.S. dollar, on average, in 2018 was 1.18 compared to 1.13 in 2017. And also the RMB weakened from 7.62 to 7.8. Looking at the share of specialty fibers, actually, there we reached a very, very good level of 45.5%. That compares to less than 42% the year before. Now moving on to earnings numbers, and let me start here with EBITDA. EBITDA came in with 342 million. Compared to 502 million the year before. As already mentioned by Stefan, that is a drop of 120 million. Where does this drop come from? Of course, on the one side, driven by lower revenues, and on the other side, of course, by higher costs for chemicals, and they are especially to be mentioned are caustic, but also higher energy costs and higher salaries and wages, simply because of more employees, but also salary inflation. Looking at EBIT and net profit, actually, of course, we see the same development there. So both numbers actually decreased in line with EBITDA. However, there are also a couple of one-offs that were included in those two numbers. I come back to that later. With regards to the net profit, actually, net profit ended up with 148 million compared to 282 the year before. Earnings per share ended up with €5.61 compared to €10.47. Now let's move on to the one-offs. Actually, the biggest one-off actually we saw is a result out of the effect of the acquisition of the remaining 30% shares in our Chinese operation that accounted for slightly more than 21 million. We also reflected an impairment on assets under construction. That, of course, refers to our site in the U.S. And we also reflected an impairment on financial assets. The impairment on assets under construction and the impairment on the financial assets, they also, of course, go hand in hand with a positive tax effect of 3.6 million. So if you add then everything up, you end up with 35 million euros that are included in group net profit. Moving on to some balance sheet numbers, actually, let me start there with net financial debt. We ended the year 2018 with a net financial debt of 219 million euros. That is, of course, an increase compared to the 67 we saw the year before. What are the reasons for that? There are two. One is, of course, the higher CapEx compared to 2017, but also the dividend we paid out after the shareholder meeting. With regards to the average capital employed, of course, we see an increase there. This is, of course, driven by the CapEx program, so we are now at a capital employed of 1,750 million. Moving on to equity, actually adjusted equity came in with 1.55 million euros. That's again a new record. Our adjusted equity ratio now stands at 59%, and I think that's you will hardly find a lot of companies, at least within Austria or even worldwide, having such an equity ratio. Looking at dividend, it has already been mentioned by Stefan, the proposal we are going to make to the shareholders is a 3 euro dividend plus a special dividend of 2 euros. Last but not least, a couple of words on the cash flow development and the trading working capital. Of course, gross cash flow is down in line with lower group profit. However, operating cash flow is basically on the same level as the year before. What you have to keep in mind there is that in 2017 we had quite some one-off effects in the operating cash flow simply because we discontinued our factoring program. Free cash flow slightly positive, same as the year before. Looking at trading working capital, actually not too many news on that front. Actually, as you can see here in this 5 years chart, actually trading working capital is hovering around a level of around 400 million euros. So overall, I would say a very solid result in a definitely more demanding environment. And with that, I hand back to Stefan for the outlook.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Maybe before we go into the market environment, 2019, Lansing, we will stay the course. We will continue to implement our strategy, and we have a couple of important milestones for 2019. Number one, the two major decisions around the investments. Towards the end of the year, we will take a call on the going ahead with the 450,000-ton dissolved wood pulp mill in Brazil. Looks very good project, is progressing well, and I think it's an important big step for the Lansing Group that we will take towards the end of the year. The decision concerning our Lyocell project in Thailand, we will take earlier than that, also in the second half year, but more skewed towards the beginning of the second half. Specialization, we will finalize, as I already indicated in my earlier comments, that TensorLux pilot line, and we will also further convert some of the standard viscose capacity in China into Lansing EcoVero. As a consequence, we also feel very comfortable with our target of 50% specialties of revenue by 2020, despite the fact that Mobile, Alabama will not be up and running as per the original plan. However, 2019, we absolutely see a couple of challenges next to the general macroeconomic environment, economic uncertainty. It is all around viscose standard. We see further net capacity addition being added, somewhere in the order of magnitude 400 to 600,000 tons, majority of that, again, in China, some in India, some in Indonesia. And as a consequence, we expect the standard viscose price not only to stay volatile, but also lower than in 2018. Caustic prices in the rest of the world did come down, but in Europe so far they remain on a high level, and that also puts pressure on standard viscose. And the FX rate fluctuation were already indicated by Thomas. So if we put all of this together into an amalgam, look at it through the crystal ball, yeah, macroeconomic data not as positive as what we saw in recent history. Fiber markets, not bad, still positive. Polyester and cotton on a reasonable high level. It helps, however, viscose clearly under pressure, and it's going to be a lot, again, our specialty fiber business that will help us in this period, but viscose remains under pressure. Caustic, I already mentioned. Overall in raw materials, we expect no relevant change to earnings compared to the year 2018. So based on the current exchange rate, based on what I said above, we expect the results for 2019 to reach a similar level as in 2018. As I said, despite a much tighter market environment for standard viscose, a And for me, that underpins the validity, the strength of the corporate strategies, core 10 of the Lenzing Group. We're well positioned. We're not immune, but we are significantly more resilient, and we're going to stay the course. With that, we would like to end our elucidations and open up the floor for questions. Operator, please. Hello,
ladies
operator.
Excuse me. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on a touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. Please limit yourself to two questions only so that everyone has a chance to ask a question. Should there be time left, we can start a second Q&A session. One moment for the first question, please. And the first question comes from the line of Stefan Trubrich.
Yeah, good afternoon, Stephanie. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my two question sets. I would like to take them one by one. First, I would appreciate maybe some further color on your view on the viscose industry, what's currently happening in China, particularly after Chinese New Year. As you pointed out that the environment is pretty tough at the moment, and prices actually go down by the day, despite your Chinese peers being very unprofitable. So what do you expect there? Where could prices go? And maybe how do you see the change in China with further liquidity injections being provided? Is the shadow credit banking system now back? So some color here would be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. Viscose industry, we have overcapacity. We had already end of last year some 20 days of inventory. That inventory has creeped up to above 30 days by Chinese New Year. In this period, typically, you have pretty sluggish demand, and what we observed is that when China came back from Chinese New Year, frankly, demand did not really dramatically change. Inventory did slightly come down, but overall, the whole industry was very much in production mode, and prices started to follow sharply. Some of the new investments, clearly, those who came with the new investments were major drivers of that. So overall, we are now in a territory where indeed there is no profitability for the Chinese players in viscose, those who are more on the right side of the cost curve. We are getting close or below cash territory, cash generating territory. Now, what do we see for the rest of the year? A bit difficult to give quantitative guidance on prices. What we did see is with caustic prices coming down, they immediately were passed through. With operating rates now at 83%, we expect them to fall further even as new capacity comes on. We are, let's say, we don't expect dramatic improvements on viscose on the short run. To what extent now new stimulus package will have an impact there? Frankly, I don't believe they will have a massive impact. Why? Because at the moment we're speaking about finalization of projects rather than about new projects. That's one. And the second, and that I think will, at least in the overall mix, will not necessarily help, is at the moment in China, there is still focus of environment. But if I rank it versus what we had over the last 2-3 years, clearly economic growth and stimulating the industry is more on the forefront rather than environment. So I would also not see a lot of cushioning by environmental pressure and capacity going out. However, what I would expect is that with current prices, some who are in cash losing territory over time will scale back or temporarily stop.
Okay, thanks for this. And the second question that I would have would be on Lyocell and your Tencel brand. I mean, it's promising to see the decoupling of your pricing in Lyocell is starting to show positive trends. Question from my side is, and apologies if it sounds a bit cynic, but how confident are you that this pricing level is sustainable and not rather a function of the market being short in Tencel suppliers? You basically control the market, and obviously with the latest mothballing in the US, obviously there is no further supply expected, let's say, in the coming quarters.
So number one, yes, I think we are very pleased with the pricing of Lyocell, of our Tencel, and that is not something that is just a function of the unique selling proposition of Lyocell. Yes, there is an element of demand supply as well in there. The whole approach with our branding, with innovation, with proliferating SKU needs to be seen as the strategy to combat the logical trend of pressure also on specialty prices when the supply and demand just would flip. Now, still, if we look historically at our modal prices, which develop almost the same as with Lyocell, there is no shortage today in modal. There is no shortage, but what we have accomplished is at least that our modal is seen as something different, both in terms of functionality, increasingly of sustainability. So it's very difficult to give, let's say, a digital answer to what, which I don't consider at all a cynical statement, because it's a very logical question. So we are doing all that needs to be done and can be done to defend the Lyocell franchise on the long run. And it's, as I said, innovation, SKU proliferation, and branding. Now, at the same time, we're working also on our costs, of course, that we want to make sure that we're not only going to stay the best, but also the most competitive player in Lyocell, because that's always important. There, our scale, the magnitude of our assets, of course, help.
Okay, this fully understood. But the question is then, if you are confident that your Lyocell SKUs or Tencel SKUs are gaining market share, you get pricing power. Why is this taking then so much long time to basically scale up your production and basically give a go ahead in Thailand? Because the announcement initially was in June 2017, and it's now basically you guide for this early summer, hopefully, that you give the green light, and then it might take 2 years until this new Jumbo capacity comes on stream with 100,000 tons. I mean, if it's so successful, why are you not using the opportunity now and pushing ahead and try to get as quickly as possible more capacity in the market? What are your thoughts and concerns?
The thinking is the following. I think what we have learned also in Mobile, Alabama, that it does pay off to finalize all the engineering, to have a real, you know, I would say a blueprint of this new 90,000 kiloton concept in hand, then go out to the market, ask for bids, and then make a final decision. That's not necessarily what we did in Mobile, Alabama originally, where we made an announcement and the decision to build before we had that, and then we were caught by the markets in the U.S. somewhat, you know, or we sort of entered the market at the wrong moment in time. And Lyocell is very successful. We will build those assets, but we want to do this with diligence and prudence.
Okay, and the question to that, I mean, so you can't give us at this point probably any CapEx guidance on these projects, or maybe you can, hopefully for 2019, at least, as obviously for us analysts, it's at the moment a bit of a tough nut to crack to pencil in CapEx projections and appropriately value your stock without knowing, okay, what CapEx is now to come. So if you could share something with us, at least some yardsticks, it would be helpful. And maybe also a comment on the Tensil facility in Heiligenkreuz, where local media reported that there was a fire incident and production is idled for a couple of weeks. What's the situation there, and what are the potential financial implications of this fire incident? Thank
you. Okay, I will start with the fire, then I hand over to Thomas for CapEx guidance, and then I would also propose that we let the other people in the line ask questions. Maybe first Heiligenkreuz, we had a fire on beginning of February. We have three lines in Heiligenkreuz. By now, line one is again running. We expect in April still to be back on the same level as last year before we started line three investment with the same capacity, and then by towards the end of June to be operational with the full site again. Very disappointing for our customers, clearly not good. Was the first time that we had to declare force majeure. However, financially, it will not have an impact because we are appropriately covered by insurance. But maybe, Thomas, some guidance on overall CapEx.
Yeah, with regards to overall CapEx, I think the assumption is that in 2019, actually, CapEx will be around the same level as in 2018.
Okay, and for the CapEx, it will then provide on Thailand specific details by mid-year when you announce it, and then end of 2019, precise details on the cost for the pipe plant, or is this in Thailand then?
Yes.
Excuse me?
Correct.
That is the plan, yeah.
Okay,
so
good.
At
thank
announcements,
you.
We also guide on CapEx.
Okay, good. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Sebastian Bray of Berenberg.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for taking my questions, or good afternoon, I should say. Could I please ask on your guidance? I have a few, but this is the main one. Does the guidance for a similar result year on year refer to EBITDA or EPS? And to probe this a bit more, if I assume that you have the same impact or a similar scale of impact of IFRS 16 to other players, but what is the additional positive benefit from this on your EBITDA, i.e. how much does appreciation go up by? That's my first question. My second is on increase in personnel costs and R&D. I suspect that the results that you reported today would have been a bit further away from consensus had R&D not fallen reasonably sharply year on year. What should we be thinking about in terms of underlying increase in personnel costs and R&D for 2019 and beyond? Are we going to be staffing up? Is there going to be further staffing up, or are you happy with your current headcount? So those are my two questions. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe starting with the guidance, I think you should read it, you know, a guidance in the full set of numbers. So revenue, EBITDA, as well as net income. However, and I would like to make this really point, please also note that somewhere around, and that also reflects the ambiguity that we still have, or the lack of transparency that we have, particularly on how viscose prices and caustic prices will develop. I will then hand over to Thomas later for the technical question around IFRS. On the personnel side, we will continue to increase slightly our headcount in preparation for the large-scale projects. But overall, I think for the business, we are well staffed. For some of the special projects, we're going to increase personnel costs. And also the R&D question, I will ask Thomas to address.
Okay, then let me start with IFRS 16. Actually, the impact we foresee is that our balance sheet will grow by about 30 to 35 million euros. And actually, the impact on EBITDA, because it's then a switch between other expenses and depreciation, will be roughly one quarter of that number on a yearly basis. Is it on IFRS and on R&D? Actually, the R&D number actually we disclose is according to Frascati, which also includes CAPEX projects. And as we finalized a major project back in 2017, this explains actually the decrease in R&D expense according to Frascati. However, if you would just take a look at the operating costs, the R&D costs as such, actually there is no decrease.
That's helpful. If I just look at your target, one last one from me, before for your revenues, the 50% by 2020. I'm right in saying that there does not appear to be any incremental volume growth for Lenzing by the end of 2020. So the question is, what is this a mix of? Is it how to what extent is this you raising prices on specialty fibers further, or to what extent is this you being bearish or less positive on viscose prices, and mathematically speaking, the increase in specialty being a result simply of the same absolute contribution from specialties but a lower one from viscose?
I think you have all three effects. Number one, it's not that we don't have volume growth. We will see whether it is from just, let's say, operational improvements, but of course also our line 3 in Heiligenkreuz, we get additional volumes. The second one, and that's the more portfolio effects, the turning standard viscose into Ecovero absolutely makes a relevant contribution both to the nominator as well as the denominator. And then it is indeed also reflecting the confidence in our price resilience on the specialty part, where we don't have, let's say, a very bullish outlook on the viscose part.
Right. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Laura Lopez of Baader Bank.
Hi, good afternoon. I have three questions. So first, on inventory. So you also increased your inventories in 2018. Is this more from your standard viscose or more specialty viscose increase in inventories? And also, you mentioned some restocking at your clients, so inventory levels very high in viscose in general. So do you expect a destocking in the second quarter and maybe then a little pressure also from the volume side, from demand for your product? So that's the first one. And the second one on dissolved wood pulp. So dissolved wood pulp prices have also been coming down this year. How do you see this developing? Is this there are also new capacity additions coming, but I don't know if there's already some volumes that are out there. And that is of wood pulp, the bottlenecking. Did this already had an impact in 2018, or does the positive impact for Lenzing will be first in 2019? And the last one on tensile looks. How is the pilot plan there developing, and how do you see that fiber also developing in the next years?
Okay. I will address the restocking at clients, the dissolved wood pulp, as well as tensile looks, and I will then ask Thomas to speak briefly about the inventories. Yes, we have high stock level of viscose at viscose players in the industry, but also particularly at yarn level. Yes, we also expect this to go down. That is, I think, for many, particularly further down in the value chain, a non-sustainable situation. They will offload this, and that's why, again, we don't see a release on the pressure of prices also from that front. These old wood pulp prices indeed came down I think there's always two major factors that influence dissolved wood pulp prices next to the supply-demand within the dissolved wood pulp market, and it's not going to be structurally different than what we had last year. Number one is the ability of customers to pay. So I think viscose prices played a major role why dissolved wood pulp prices came down, even though they didn't come even closely as much down as viscose. The second factor, however, and it's very important, is paper pulp prices, because quite some players in the industry have the ability to both produce dissolved wood pulp as well as paper pulp, and depending on the economics, they switch. Now, paper pulp prices did come down after record highs in 18 back to a less high level, but the general sentiment in the industry is that paper pulp prices will continue to trend upward again towards the end of the year. So dissolved wood pulp, we at the moment don't see any dramatic changes versus what we had last year, because those things will keep in balance. On Tensilux, the development is very positive. You get a lot of positive traction in the industry, but as I said during the launch and also subsequent calls, Tensilux will remain a long-term development program for us. It's not a major profit contributor short-term, but in terms of the transformation of the portfolio, transformation of the group, this is a very, very important step, also adding a lot of new competencies. Thomas, maybe on inventories?
With regards to inventories, I mean, the major increase, of course, is coming from viscose, because we were not pushing volume into the market at any cost. This is one thing. The other thing I think that needs to be mentioned is, originally with Line 3 in Heiligenkreuz going online, actually the intention was to build up quite some buffer stock. However, now with the incident we had, actually this will have to be postponed anyway.
Okay, thank you very much. That was very helpful.
Next question comes from a line of Stefan Trubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question, if I may, would be related to caustic soda. I mean, you pointed out that in Asia, prices have been declining since, let's say, the second half of 2018. Europe has been, let's say, more elevated still, but is now also coming down. However, there are obviously a lot of caustic imports coming from Asia to Europe. Is there no opportunity for you to take advantage of the let's say the price delta between Asia and Europe?
Very good question. Actually, we have already started importing caustic from Asia, and we will ramp up our import capacities accordingly. So this is something, of course, we were watching by the day, and we have already, as said before, we have already started importing caustic, and we will further ramp up our import capacities. So I think that will definitely be helpful over the quarters to come to mitigate actually any impact here in Europe.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Theresa Schönwald of RCB.
Thank you. Good afternoon, thank you for taking my one remaining question. I was frankly a bit surprised that you did not mention higher energy prices as a cost driver for 2019, CO2 electricity. Why is that?
We mentioned higher energy costs actually as one explanation why costs creeped up, and actually the guidance, if you take a look at the guidance, actually what we said that cost of materials and supplies are actually the whole area in total, we don't expect any significant change.
Could you give us a hint about the energy component of the overall non-change?
No, We don't actually disclose the specific cost of energy. I think what is important to bear in mind that Lenzing is pretty integrated on energy at some of our sites, specifically here at Lenzing site, where we also run cogeneration units where we produce our own energy out of biomass. But overall, I think energy comes well after dissolved wood pulp and caustic in the importance for our total company.
Thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Sebastian Bray of Berenberg.
Hello again. One quick follow-up from me. I'm still trying to understand where volume growth, if any, comes for the next 2 years. I see on page 45 of the appendix to the slides, the capacity year-on-year is given flat at 145 kilotons across all fibres for 2019 versus 2018. I assume that there's nothing coming, or at least there's nothing being announced for 2020. Could you, if this is just simply because you get the annualized benefit from Heiligenkreuz, could you specify what that would be? Or am I missing something and there is actually incremental volume here? Thank you.
I think two things. First of all, on Heiligenkreuz, we had it only a small portion of last year really in full swing. So I would say a major part of Heiligenkreuz is yet to come in. The second one, we don't show production, we show capacity levels, or nameplate capacity levels, and that is something we also going to continue to push up, but not every individual production success or so we disclose as part of the total capacity picture, because that is not really meaningful.
And just to specify, is it reasonable to say 10 to 15 kilotons of Heiligenkreuz in 2019 then as incremental production, or...?
I would go more to the upper end of this.
Okay,
but
thank you.
I take this back. In a year where Heiligenkreuz runs at 100%, we just had the fire. Financially, it will not have an impact. But year 2019, of course, we will be impacted by the fire, where I already gave some elucidations. But if you take for a year 2020, you should use more the upper end of the range that you have described.
Understood. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Laura Lopez of Baader Bank.
Hi. Also, I forgot to ask again regarding the dissolved wood pulp, the bottlenecking, if this had already an impact in 2018 or if this is also something that we are just seeing in the next couple of quarters.
You will see dissolved wood pulp in Lenzing as of Q3 of this year.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Matthias Pfeifenberger of Deutsche Bank.
A couple of remaining questions from my side. Firstly, congrats on the specialties pricing; it's quite impressive. Then maybe I know you don't comment on individual competitors, but maybe you can share views on what you think the cash costs are, etc., with regards to the new volumes. Is it fair to assume it's still substantially below the viscose prices in the market? And then secondly, MMC demand growth. Previously, we were saying it's 5 to 6%, even spilling above 6% recently because the market is really strong. Have you got a new number there, or is it basically unchanged? And then on the engineering capacities in-house, I mean, what are you making different in Thailand versus the US? How do you feel about having cut the lensing technique capacity so substantially? And is it maybe a safer bet to just keep that more in-house than outside? Thanks.
Okay. With respect to cash cost of competition, maybe following answer. If you look at the cash costs curve for viscose, you need to take two different views. The first one is the cash cost of the conversion. There is a pretty flat industry cost curve versus insignificant, I would say, differences between the cost leaders among the cost leaders. There is clearly some very inefficient capacities in the Q4, but overall it's a rather flat cost curve. That's very different with dissolved wood pulp. Dissolved wood pulp has a very steep cost curve. And the question is always, how do you look at this business? On an integrated basis, we would assume that the new integrated capacities that some of our competitors have are more towards the left of the cost curve. We feel we ourselves are on the left side of the cost curve, even in a high-priced country like Europe, given the very positive integration we have. But that is the key question to ask. With respect to wood-based cellulosic fiber demand, we saw last year demand at the some of the lower part of the range that you mentioned. We expect this, however, again to slightly go up, particularly as price levels now really fuel demand in the various collections. So structurally, the 5 to 6% we still think is a good range. With respect to engineering, we have to follow in countries like Thailand or the U.S. a different concept than what we need to follow in Austria. In Austria, Lenzing followed an owner execution mode where we were pretty much managing every individual supplier, but that requires a lot of, let's say, experience, network, and so on in the specific market. If you go into a new market that is more demanding, and there we are also more in concepts like in EPC or EPCM concepts that also require a very different approach to actually how you, let's say, ask for quotations and so on. And that, I think, is one of the very important things for Lenzing to get used to, because that is an important skill that we need to have in our global growth base. And when it comes to keeping things in-house, we still have well over 100 people in-house that are really manufacturing parts of a plant. Everything that is IP critical, we're manufacturing in-house exactly for the reason because that is IP critical. We don't want to have it somewhere else. And it's not just about the process. It's also about what kind of equipment you use, what is the what qualities do you get as a consequence, and what prices you get in your running costs.
Yeah, okay, thanks a lot.
There are no further questions.
Okay, with that, I would like to close the call. Thank you, everybody, for dialing into the annual result call 2018. I wish you all a good day. Thank you very much.